Hello and welcome to episode 9 of Gamers Without Borders. I am Patrick Mifflin alongside Teresa Sammons, Lee Lam, and Kayla Owen. And it is now 2021. We have finally put 2020 behind us. And that means that it is the 35th anniversary of The Legend of Zelda. Probably on the top 5, maybe the top 3 list of most influential games of all time. Yeah, let's jump right into it. Nintendo kind of had The Legend of Zelda earmarked as an important title when they first launched it in 1986. It's not for no reason that they saw fit to put it in a gold box with a gold cartridge. And it was incredibly groundbreaking. Games up to that point were generally finished in a single session, or at best, they utilized the password system to allow you to continue your progress midway. The Legend of Zelda used a battery backup and let you save your progress as you went through the game, and let you carry a single playthrough over a number of days or even months. That was an interesting thing. It bears mention that Dragon Quest and Final Fantasy soon followed, and by the time we were done with the NES, it had a whole host of battery backup games that let you save your progress, but it all really came back to The Legend of Zelda. And even from a design standpoint, it was highly influential because NEC was right there with the TurboGrafx/PC engine, and they have a series called Newtopia, which is directly influenced by The Legend of Zelda, and honestly are very enjoyable and noteworthy games in their own right. We talk about the TurboGrafx Mini quite a bit on here. They are both on there in both Japanese and English forms. So if you ever want to check those out, you want some of that old school Zelda flavor, absolutely pick that up. But let's start with our own individual introductions to the series. Kayla, do you want to go first?
Sure. So growing up, my dad had The Legend of Zelda and Zelda 2 on the NES, and I didn't really play those. But I played a little bit of A Link to the Past when it came out. But it was Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask that I felt like was my first proper intro to the series. Those were the games that I... those were the first Zelda games I actually played through and beat. But it was Wind Waker that really got me into the series and inspired me to go look at the other Zelda games that I had not played. And I still feel like Wind Waker, well, since Breath of the Wild came out, I kind of have a different opinion about what the best Zelda game is, but I think Wind Waker is still pretty close to being my favorite. I still love the sailing mechanics, and I love the art style and presentation of the game. And again, I have a real soft spot in my heart for it because it's the game that made me want to play Zelda. And if I remember correctly, maybe somebody can correct me here. Weren't the original Zelda games re-released for the GameCube when Wind Waker came out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a pre-order bonus, and a lot of people were gaming this. No, that wasn't Wind Waker. That was Ocarina of Time that was the pre-order bonus for Wind Waker. There was a special edition silver GameCube that came out, and the Legend of Zelda bonus disc was that was included with it, which had The Legend of Zelda, The Adventure of Link, Ocarina of Time, and
Master Quest.
No, the Master Quest was on the Ocarina of Time disc. That was the pre-order bonus for Wind Waker.
And I remember that later on down the line. Later on down the line, that disc was highly coveted.
Yes.
Yeah, we still have it. It was Zelda 1, Zelda 2, The Adventure Link, Ocarina of Time, and Majora's Mask. And then there was a demo of Wind Waker on there.
Oh, that was it. Yeah. And I think I still have that GameCube sitting around too.
Mine's right there. Well, it's not silver, but I got the disc without buying the GameCube.
Yeah, there were a lot of people who were buying the GameCube, keeping the disc, and then returning, quote unquote, returning the GameCube to the store just to get that. Like Lee said, it was coveted.
Yeah. And then we ended up with a virtual console. Anyway.
Which should still be a thing, damn it.
Right. It should be.
But yeah, anyway, sorry to derail that there, Kayla. So what were you going to say?
Oh, I was just going to say that Wind Waker to me basically summed up what I loved about Zelda. And it was really just all about the sailing and
finding random curiosities on the overworld.
Yeah, because that to me was, and when I played Zelda on the NES after that, I realized basically what I wanted from Zelda and what I wanted from those games in terms of gameplay, as opposed to the way Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask played. And again, eventually found that again in Breath of the Wild.
Yeah. Yeah, we can get to Breath of the Wild here in a bit.
that's coming up.
Yeah.
We're not going to not talk about that.
Yeah, that actually ties into my own personal future vision of the series. But how about you, Lee?
So I was old school and got Zelda 1 when I got my original Nintendo. And I remember the thing that stuck out to me at first was the obviously the game itself was gold, and like the game, the box was gold as well. And you know, for being like, I was five when it came out. It's like, it felt really special because all the other Nintendo games, you know, had a similar color quality of the game pack. Everything was gray, you know, the packaging all looked the same. And I was a kid that was just kind of like, oh man, this feels like larger than life. And the funny part was, is that it was given to me, and because obviously I was a kid, I couldn't buy shit.
Yeah.
And I remember I you know, ran around, got the sword, was like, this is fucking awesome. And then I went into the first dungeon, which is like that tree with like a doorway in it, and the music scared the shit out of me. No. It was very, very spooky. And so then I just turned it off. So, and it took me like a year to come back to it. And then when I did, I was just completely enthralled with it. And then, you know, later on down the line, we had Zelda 2 come out, which was like a big deal for a bunch of people that I knew, because it felt like here's a game that has some of that Zelda flavor with the overworld and all of that, but it has this side scrolling option. And, you know, looking back at it now, I mean, I can't believe how fucking hard it was, you know? And Zelda 2 felt very, very exacting. Like when you get to that one area where you need like a candle and you can constantly like run into fucking people and shit, but it still felt really, really magical. And the funny part too, that I remember,
that game was a fucking ball breaker the whole way through when you were first starting it.
Yeah. It really was. But the thing that I remember at the time that I didn't realize as a kid, because, you know, you're for lack of a better term, you're not expecting a lot of these games to have a lot of story. And Zelda had story on the periphery. But then you get to Zelda 2 and it's like, yeah, Ganon's fucking, you know, they're trying to bring Ganon back by murdering you and then spreading your blood on his ashes. And it was like, I don't think me as a kid grasped how fucking dark that was, you know?
Fucking metal.
And so I always liked Zelda, and I always liked the idea of the gameplay that it provided, but I have to say that I didn't really come into my own with it and really be like, this series is the shit until A Link to the Past. And I still think to this day A Link to the Past is the best Zelda game that's ever been made.
Yeah.
And I think part of it came I think part of it is because of the time that I played it at. So like, for example, when I was playing it, you know, the big deal was, I'm sure everybody here has played this, right? Cause I don't want to, you know, spoiler alert. Okay. So spoiler alert, I remember playing that game and it was one of the first games that we had played on Super Nintendo. I had a buddy named Lee as well, just like my name, who had won a Super Nintendo at his elementary school's like a fall raffle.
Oh my God.
I'm talking about like at launch, okay? So we were playing like Mario World, and then we were able, and you know, at the time we couldn't afford these games, so we were renting everything. And so the summer that he got that, we went to, we were at home, and his mom and my mom split time watching us. And we rented Zelda Link to the Past the night before because we were like, oh my God, this is a new Zelda game. This is going to be awesome. So we rent it and we stay up the entire night. And then Lee's mom wakes us up the next morning and is like, I've got to go to work. You guys have to come with me because, you know, she can't leave. Honestly, we were like 10 at the time. She's like, you know, I can't leave your 10-year-old punk asses here at the house. You'll burn the house down, you know? And so they had a black and white TV at her office. And so we hooked the Nintendo up to the Super Nintendo up to the black and white TV.
No.
And I think we ended up playing that game. I don't know, like I want to say 3 or 4 days. And, you know, and we were switching the controller, doing this and that. But what tripped me out was, you know, you get to the part where you're fighting Aghanim and you're like, okay, yeah, you know, this is it. This is the end of the game. And then all of a sudden it's like, psych. No, it's not. And all of a sudden this entire section of the game opens up where it's like, you got to go get these, you know, the 7 pendants or whatever. And then after that, it's like you get midway through and it's like, oh, and here's the dark world. And it was just like, what the fuck? Like, this is the coolest thing ever. And I remember very few games before or since really have ever given me that level of grandiosity to it, where it was like, you know, really just kind of like this, but wait, there's more moment. And the music and the graphics and just the way everything was implemented, I still don't think they've ever done it as well as they did with A Link to the Past. I'm not a big fan of Ocarina of Time.
Me either.
I think it's one of those games that's very overrated. I can understand why people like it, but it is just not my cup of tea. I, however, really enjoyed Wind Waker. And after that, you know, we had Twilight Princess, which I couldn't deal with because of Waggle. And I also really couldn't do it with Skyward Sword either. And I think what happened, especially too, at that time is the Zelda games really, really started having a bloat problem. Like, I think one of the things that works so well for A Link to the Past is that even though the game feels just astronomically big, you can beat it in 20 hours. You know, as sort of epic as I think that game is it's very Spartan in the way that it does things, and it doesn't waste your time. And I felt like they started kind of getting into wasting your time with Ocarina of Time. Then they were like, oh wow, people really like this. And they doubled down on that with Wind Waker's Triforce Quest, which was just ridiculous. And then they were like, yeah, Twilight Princess, let's just make it so it's like 9 fucking hours before you can do anything. And then, you know, Skyward Sword was worse. So I kind of feel like, at least for the type of Zelda games that I like, they've really been, you know, the top down games. You know, I loved Link to the Past. Oh, that's the other thing. After Link to the Past came out, we had Link's Awakening. Yeah, Link's Awakening comes out and it's like got a lot of the same mechanics, but then it's just got like weird shit in it. And it just is still at the same time, like felt like very, very cool. And to me, that was like definitive Zelda. And a lot of the stuff that they've done since is sort of deviated from that. I also I'm one of the people that really doesn't like Breath of the Wild much either. And I've put probably 50 hours into it. And it just comes down to like, you have this really interesting, unique world that is limited by things like breaking weapons and is just really I feel like the game works against you from wanting you to go out and explore things. You know, the shrines and stuff are not enough. The divine beasts were not enough. Like, give me fucking dungeons.
Yes.
You know, so I
think Breath of the Wild was something they could get away with once. Because it did tell a really interesting Zelda story that was in a sense that it came from an angle that we'd never really looked at, which was the end of the legend. And I take issue with the quote unquote true ending, but.
Well, and I still haven't beat it. I got to Ganon and it was just like, what am I doing this for? Like, I ended up buying like the DLC so that, because I think what really became the point of contention that just made me put down the game was I have to buy a DLC to power up the Master Sword. And like if I don't do that and complete these just completely bullshit combat tasks, which by the way, I don't think Breath of the Wild's combat is very good. I think what it does is that it focuses on, okay, combat in Zelda has not changed since Wind Waker. And because of that, what you end up doing is you create a situation, and this is a very apparent in Breath of the Wild, where in order to get around the fact that if you had a permanent weapon, you could just beat the shit out of everyone and not worry about anything, they augment the difficulty of the game through weapon breakage and through enemies just hitting like a truck.
Yeah.
And to me, that's not difficulty. To me, that's we don't know how to tune this, so fuck you. And that's really bothersome to me because I'm sitting here thinking like whatever you know, I know they've done crazy things with the stories and shit like that. But the bottom line for me is that, okay, if you want to have the first 30 hours of the game be that way, fine. But once I get the Master Sword, that fucking thing shouldn't need a timeout after I swing it 7 times. Like I'm the goddamn hero. This is the most fucking powerful weapon in the fucking world, but I swing it 8 times and it can't hurt anybody for 5 minutes. Like, are you serious? This is what we're fucking doing? And that just ended up being the final straw for me because it was like, get the DLC and you can do the Master's Quest, the Master Sword trials, which are really just unimaginative combat trials, which again, the game's strong point isn't combat. And so the only way to make combat bearable is to make you go through like 80 levels of combat. Like, no, fuck you. I don't have time for this shit. And it's a shame because the world is beautiful and it, like to your point, Pat, it does something really unique where it's like, hey, let's look at this at the end. You know, that's a really interesting and unique idea because you're going from the place of you've always played a character that wins, right? Yeah. And instead you're playing the character that lost. And so what are you doing to pick up the pieces and deal with the chaos that's been wrought around you? And that's an interesting concept, and it's an interesting thing to play through. But to that point, Pat, I'm with you. I think this is something they probably could have only gotten away with once.
But they're doing it again, and
I'll tell you what though, if they do that, if they do weapon breakage, I'm out. Like that's and I think that's sort of
I can see why they wouldn't. I'm not going to. Sorry to cut you off there. I can see them doing away with weapon breakage for the same reason I actually hated the ending. But
yeah, I haven't beaten it, so I don't know what the ending is.
That's why I'm not going to go too deeply into it. I know what my idealized Breath of the Wild ending would be, but they would have never done it.
Well, and see, my big issue with it is it sort of speaks to what I think is a foundational problem with Zelda in the first place is that it seems like every game, I think since A Link to the Past, has sort of been compromised in that it is, here's this gimmick that we're sticking you with, right? Like, it was the Ocarina in Ocarina of Time, and then it's the sailboat in Wind Waker, and the sailboat works, but what ends up happening too...
Same problem that the Sonic series had for the longest time.
Yeah, well, and not just that. Like, I think the other part that happens is that you're stuck with this world that is interesting to travel around, but is not interesting to be in. And then, so I feel like Breath of the Wild is the exact opposite. It's an interesting world to travel in, but is not interesting to be in because there's nothing there except like the same 5 townspeople. Everything is really just empty. And here are these shrines.
It's a dead Hyrule.
You can go do. yeah, here are these, and here's, it makes sense, right? Like, we're talking about, like, what makes sense for the story. It makes sense. Ganon fucking fucked everything up. Like, that, again, I'm with that. But it just comes down to, like, so you have this interesting world that I can walk around and I can do a lot of things with. But why would I?
Because it's great. No, why would you not want to go?
Here's the thing. I'll tell you why it's not great. Because how many times can I do a fucking a combat shrine? How many times can I do, you know, the same thing where it's like, oh, move a ball around, do this, do that. Like, those are dungeon puzzles. If you want to do that and dungeons, do it.
Yeah,
but like having that be the only reason I'm walking around the world, and then even for like the stuff that's fun for traversal in the world, like shield surfing, it'll destroy my shield. What the fuck am I even doing?
Yeah, the deep dive shrines. There were a few good deep dives. Go ahead. Sorry.
There were other things to do. I mean, you could get the royal horse. You get the royal stallion. You could get
Around in a world that I don't like being in anyway.
Well, why didn't you like being in it? There was tons of stuff to cook. There were tons of other
which brings me to another problem. All right. God, this is going to turn into the fuck the Breath of the Wild podcast. I'm sorry. This will just be the only thing I say. Breath of the Wild works as an open world game from 2006. That is the problem with it. It, like, the fundamental issue with it is it is Nintendo at its best and at its worst. Because, like, for example, you're talking about cooking. Why isn't there a recipe list? Why do I gotta write shit down?
You don't have to write shit down. There's not a recipe list because you go to Wiki.
No. Like, when I cook something and it turns out to be awesome, the game doesn't save shit.
Okay, if I want to recreate that. I will.
Right. If I want to recreate the recipe, guess what I got to do? I got to fucking remember what I did. So that's a problem that I have with it. You know, stuff like, okay, I want to go shield surfing. Well, I destroy my shield and I might need that fucking shield because the combat in this game isn't very good because it's Wind Waker combat. So I need to make sure that I actually have a cadre of good weapons and things like that so that I don't just get my ass blown out.
Sure.
Because I ran into something at the wrong time.
And that's the thing. Then you mark that on your overworld. You go, you gear up, and you go and you fight that Lynel, or you go and you fight that Hinox, whatever it is. Those were fun to stumble upon. Looking for fountains were great. Absolutely. Too.
But here's the thing, right? If the whole game itself is about so if we break down the reason that you're in that world, right? Is like combat is exploring and everything. Why do you make the exploring so dependent on things that are limited to you, right? So like, for example, I remember one of the things that I think Breath of the Wild does the best is the climbing mechanic, but then the game does stupid shit to get in your way. Like, oh, well, guess what? You might be in the middle of climbing up a mountain, but now it's going to rain. So you're going to fall.
Well, right? Yeah.
Or guardians show up and start railgunning you to ribbons.
But that's happens. So, you can't control the rain in real life. And then you're sitting there swinging away and you're about to beat that fucking Hinox and you're swinging.
And then the game fucks you.
Yeah, and you get hit by lightning.
Like, oh, I was beating the shit out of this Hinox, but guess what? I just ran into a fucking hurricane and now I can't wear metal.
This is Nintendo. You've played Mario Party and Mario Kart.
No, I don't play Mario Party because I like myself.
they have perfected the art of, fuck you.
I know, and that's the thing. That might be something that I'd have gone for when I was like 15. But man, I'm going to die in like 30 years. And I don't want to be like, well, you know, I spent 130 hours being frustrated at this game. Because like that. So again, like to that point, this is the most Nintendo game ever because it has really, really stellar ideas and ways that certain things are implemented that is just awesome. But it's then held back by this feeling like the game doesn't want you in its world. Like if I'm in the middle of fucking fighting something and then, like I said, we end up in a situation where lightning comes on. Well, guess what? I'm going to get fucked. For no good reason, except that's what the game determined would happen.
Yeah,
right?
It's RNG.
It's not RNG. They got
to give you a way to skill your way out of it.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is, Pat. If
you know,
I detest after all of these years, I detest being fucked by a number generator. And that's what it comes down to. I detest being fucked by a number generator. And that is really what a lot of that, at least with the combat, comes down to is, are these certain elements, like, for instance, if the storm started, I wouldn't go fight if the storm started before I got into a fight. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But, and then, so that's one problem. The other issue is the inventory system. It might as well be called Breath of the Inventory. Okay. You spend more time in the inventory system in the middle of a damn fight because you broke something. That is terrible design.
And it comes down to, I don't think it's going to go away either.
Yeah, and that's why I'm probably not going to buy the piece of shit. And here's the thing. I know that, you know, for folks like you, Teresa, who I love, you think I'm fucking crazy. My kid thinks I'm crazy too.
No, but I think you don't like it.
I think that, look, I can fundamentally understand why people enjoy that game. I totally do. But it is not for me because, like, to Pat's point, don't stick me in a situation that I can't get out of based on the systems that you implemented to me. If I wanted to do that, I would go back and play old 8-bit games, but I don't, you know? And so, like, even like, and when we're talking about like RNG and things like that, you know, I, for a very long time, was a hardcore raider in WoW. And I played a class especially when it came out, was the Death Knight, and I tanked. And you were only living as a death tank if you knew how to play. And so because of the skill floor being so high and then the skill ceiling being even higher, I was an incredible fucking tank. And the reason for that was because, like, we could play games where and bosses where my whole fucking raid team would get murdered and I could still live. And that was because I knew how to play. So even though, you know, say those my teammates got critted and died and did all these other things, because I can play well, I had a tech way, because of my skill level, to continue forward. And Breath of the Wild takes that away from you in so many instances, and that's why I don't like it. Don't put me in a situation where essentially the game is conspiring against me. That's not fun for me. Because I can't chalk that up to, oh, well, I'll just try it again. I'll just be like, I'll just turn this motherfucker off.
It's like a raft portion in the original Castlevania where you have one of the mermen jump up directly underneath you. You pay up a life at that point. There's nothing you can really do about it's not reactable. Things like that.
Like on the last, what was it, 6-1 of Castlevania, when they're throwing Medusa heads, mermen, everything at you, and it's just like you make one pixel of a wrong move because of where they put you, guess what? You're starting all over.
Yep.
And I don't that would have worked for me again when I was a teenager, but it's not for me now. And the thing is that I think you can overlook some of those things if you were drawn to like the world or the stuff that you could do in it. But I couldn't get past the fundamentals of, you guys didn't know how to make combat better, so you just made the enemies hit harder. And then you didn't also know how to deal with the difficulty, so you made the weapons breakable. So that way I never ended up being overpowered, and therefore my power level was entirely RNG. And that's bullshit. That's total bullshit. And like, to your point, Therese, like fighting Lynels and stuff like that was fun. Again, I went through the Master Sword Trials. I beat the fuck out of those things. You know, so it's not for a lack of skill, but it just came down to like, not just risk and reward, but what is the actual reward for me doing this? Because the only reason like I played those trials is because I didn't want to deal with the weapon breakage. And if you put out DLC to power up a weapon to get around the main core concept of your game, then you designed a fucking stupid game. That would be like playing Street Fighter 3 and then saying, this character doesn't have to parry. We're just going to let you hold back. Oh, God. And they'll parry if you do it that way. Complete antithesis of the way the game works, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, or it would be like introducing a character in Tekken, where Tekken is all about staying, you know, right up close and personal. And then when you play that character, your opponent can't move except left and right, and you can throw fireballs. There's no way they'll beat you. And it's the same. That's how I felt with Breath of the Wild. It was like, we are constricted to this combat engine, so we're just going to create subsystems around it that are RNG based because we don't know how to deal with the power curve of this character. And the thing that's so stupid about that is every other Zelda game didn't have that problem. Even Breath, or excuse me, even Wind Waker, which again, that's the same combat engine. Wind Waker would still throw enemies at you that could beat the shit out of you, but your sword never broke.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, let's not introduce new enemies or do things or do this or that or whatever. Let's just make it, let's make you the thing that is the variable on, and then the variable is everything that you're carrying.
Yes.
You know, and that's just bullshit. And it's really ironic because the other stuff that the game does really well, like being out in the world, playing with the physics engines and shit that they have in place, is incredibly rewarding and feels fantastic. But if I have to go through sequences that are just, I would rather hit myself in the nuts with a hammer just to get to the good parts, then I don't have nuts anymore. So what am I doing? You know? So anyway, end rant. I still think Zelda's great. I'm hoping that, you know, that they do something new with Breath of the Wild 2. Like, I think if they could get rid of the breakage, I could probably deal with almost everything else, because then it really does come down to a skill-based thing. So if a Lionel kills me, it's because I fucked up, not because my weapon broke.
Yeah, but you should plan for your attack and have the weapons you, know, you need.
Therese, you just need to shut your pirate hooker mouth.
Well, I mean...
No. Seriously, though.
In the third Lionel fight. Come on.
Right. So anyway, look, I totally understand that. Like, I imagine for you, the trial and error is also part of the fun.
Well, I wouldn't call it exactly fun, but.
Well, then what are you doing, darling?
Sometimes you like to be frustrated as hell. And some of those Lionel fights were Hinox fights. Well,
I have a job. I don't like being frustrated when I'm not at work.
I know. You don't like to scream at your games? Come on. If you're not calling it a motherfucking piece of dog shit, then it's not a good game.
Maybe this is just because you live in the north. You guys can't go outside in the winter. You're like, time to scream at some games. No.
Bitch, we go outside in the winter. We'll fucking go outside and barbecue. We don't care. All
right, fair enough. That's true. But you know what? If you barbecue, though, I bet you got a recipe list.
Yeah, true.
That's true.
True. Oh, well,
you're not like throwing ribs and a bunch of random shit on the grill and be like, well, I hope it works out.
No. That is me. But Scott's the one with a recipe list.
There you go. So Scott's sitting there like, you know, that don't do that. Don't do that.
Completely.
Imagine every time you went to grill, your tongs broke. You would never do it again.
Well, I mean, they do fall off the balcony. I will say that.
But they don't break.
They don't break.
But no, like, I feel like Zelda, anyway, to get back to the point, I feel like Zelda is its best when it is a 2D game. And again, there's that curve. There is that, you know, you're supposed to be this legendary hero. So what's legendary about getting your ass kicked by some random mook, you know? Because I do feel like at the same time, and I do think there's sort of a through line to this through all the Zelda games, and it's there in Breath of the Wild, but I don't think it's nearly as strong as there is that. I don't want to call it a power fantasy because that's not what it is, but there is the fantasy of being Link is the world is fucked up and I'm the one that can save the princess. I'm the one that can save the world. And I really think Breath of the Wild loses that. And again, like I said, it's the most Nintendo game ever because there's stuff in it that is just fantastic. But then the other stuff is like from 2006, like stuff that Oblivion did better than this game does. Let me tell you something. I'll roll up on a Guardian. And when I do have like the proper shield, I get an incredible charge out of parrying that bitch.
Exactly.
But the thing is that if I end up in a situation where I'm fighting eight of them by accident, the only thing that keeps me from winning isn't that the game is difficult or that they outplayed me. It's that my shit broke. And that just fundamentally doesn't work for me in the games that I play. I want to be limited by what my skill level is, not by the game going, well, let's fuck them right now. Anyway, so yeah, to that note, actually, before we started this podcast, you know, I've never played Link Between Worlds.
No?
And you know, part of the reason for that is that I if you can't tell from what I was mentioning earlier, I have a huge amount of reverence for Link to the Past. I definitely think it's the best Zelda game of all time.
Yeah.
My favorite game of all time is Final Fantasy VI. And that is definitely like the crown as far as games go. But I also think when if I'm trying to be fair, I guess, to everything that came out in the Super Nintendo and afterwards, I don't think A Link to the Past is anything wrong. And I think it excels in every single thing that it does. It is perfectly paced.
Yep.
The power curve for your character is perfect. There is never anything in it that is too frustrating. And if you did get your ass beat, it's your fault. And I think part of that also comes from part of that feeling and why I really do think it quite possibly may be. I'll phrase it this way. I think A Link to the Past is probably the perfect video game.
It's very much like Princess Bride. It hits all the high notes and it does it in perfect timing.
Right. Like Final Fantasy VI is my favorite game of all time, but I know it is not perfect. Whereas I would say Legend of Zelda: A Link to the Past is, if I could point to any game as being perfect, it would be Legend of Zelda: Link to the Past, because it does literally everything right. Everything, like I said, everything is perfectly paced. Everything in the game works. Even now, like, the graphics still look stellar. It has all these interesting ideas in it. And you can beat the shit out of chickens and then they kill you, you know, or at least run you out of town. Like, there's just so much to it. And Hyrule is realized in a way, actually, that I don't think that it has been really up until Breath of the Wild. I think you could probably say there was the way that Hyrule was realized in Wind Waker was pretty good, but, you know, again, it's have, you know, majority of it's underwater. And I think there are three games in this series overall that have this epic scope to them. And those three are the ones that we're talking about, are Link to the Past or Wind Waker and our Breath of the Wild. Like, I think Twilight Princess is a good game, but it's too big and too empty for what it is. Almost like they had this idea, like, well, we can make something huge, but we're not going to do anything interesting in between those big things, which is also the template that Ocarina of Time had. Here's this big fucking field that should impress you, but then there's these other things that are around it that are the actual things that are impressive, you know? But for the 20 minutes that I went on about how Breath of the Wild sucks, I still love Zelda. I will always love Zelda. And actually, as soon as we get off this podcast, I'm going to go to bed because I got work tomorrow. But after work tomorrow, I'm playing a Link Between Worlds to finally just give it a chance. Because it's just my own thing. But I was just like, I don't want to play a sequel to this game because it's not going to be as good, because this game is perfect.
I feel you on that one.
So yeah,
that's fair.
But I'm gonna do it because, you know, I'm actually going through my backlog now. Like, I beat Chrono Trigger during Christmas, and that's another one that I think a lot of people would say. Like, I've played that game like 8 fucking times, but I never beat it.
It's good. And it's good.
It's a fantastic game, and it is one of the best RPGs of all time. But man, that the very end is a fucking grind.
Yeah, I forgot how bad that was.
Right, that was the thing. I'd always stopped right before you went to just go, well, time to fuck Lavos up. And then you go do like the Black Omen and then go fuck Lavos up. And it's just like, here's 15 boss battles.
Yeah.
And it was just like, I'm tired. I'm tired. You know, but like.
And that's something that you don't get, that I'm tired. I'm sick of playing this. You don't get that from Link to the Past.
No. Yeah, there's no moment I felt like in Link to the Past where you're like, fuck, I wish this was just get to the point. Yeah. And like, that is one of the things that I do feel is a flaw of Breath of the Wild. And part of that also just comes from the structure of the game. It is aimless. It's meant to be go out in the world, and you can choose in how you engage all of the elements that we have provided to you, with the exception of combat. There's no way around that. So you can engage in it where you're just like, I'm just going to go do all the shrines and then be perfectly happy with it. Or you're going to be the guy that's like, I'm going to climb up the fucking mountain with my winter clothes on, and then I'm going to surf down it. And so, again, like, from an objective point of view, I understand why that game works for a lot of people.
Hi, I'm Link, and you're watching Jackass.
Yeah, right? Like, yeah.
Kind of, right?
Yeah. And I will say, the one thing that it does excel at,
let me end my Breath of the Wild sucks rant on something that it does extremely well. One of the most fun things, in my opinion, about open world games is figuring out how to break shit. And there are a lot of ways to break Breath of the Wild. Like, what is the shit where you like stun lock people and then slap the fuck out of something and then they go flying?
Well, that's just stasis. What is that?
Stasis. Yeah. Like, just, I had a blast fucking finding a rock and stasising that bitch and then fucking rolling people over like they were bowling pins. You know, like that kind of stuff is super, super fun. But that was the thing that made combat fun. The things that I could do, not the things that you took away from me. And so the Breath of the Wild excels in that. And I hope that that's one of the things that they really double down on, because taking away the limits of things like bombs and stuff like that. Like, there was times where I'd sit on top of a perch and just drop bombs on those stupid fucking moblins. And they'd be like, what the fuck is this? And then boom, in their fucking face. And then I just cackle like I was five, you know?
Have an overworld boss pop and sick chickens on it. Have you seen that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think really I would hope that Breath of the Wild can be something really, really exceptional. But I think there's going to need to be a bit of refinement, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But Zelda's still great. He says after he spent 20 minutes shitting on one of them. But I don't think this is how we envision this.
It's all good. My idealized ending for Breath of the Wild was just to have it be where, yeah, they got rid of Calamity Ganon, the dust has settled, but Hyrule is still over, and it's just going to slowly dissipate until a new civilization arrives at the same land.
Dang.
That is my idealized ending for Breath of the Wild. But that's not what they did, so I'm salty.
You know, it's always weird when you have something like that happen, isn't it? Where you're like, you look at a game and you're like, if they had just made this one pivot, it would have worked. Like, I felt that way about Lords of Shadow, that Castlevania remake. Like, I felt like it was a great start as a Castlevania reboot, but I thought the thing that they should have done, spoiler alert, is they should have made what was the main character's name? It wasn't Richter. It obviously wasn't Simon. Trevor. No, it wasn't Trevor either. Well, anyway, whoever the fucking Belmont was that you played.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the game, what they should have done is had you become Dracula, and then that is why the Belmonts hunt Dracula. And then you codify why the Belmonts go after Dracula. Not just because, you know, they're out to kill this monster. It's because that is their blood. This thing that you know, is essentially the progeny of all of them and led to, you know, their line is the thing that they have to destroy. And that is an interesting concept, because what it does is it creates a conflict that goes beyond Dracula just being evil.
Yeah.
Right. It is the people that are coming after me are my grandchildren. And then that creates a very different dramatic take on why both of these parties are driven at each other the way that they are. But instead it's like, you're Dracula and you wake up in 2000.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's where y'all went, huh?
Well, the character you're thinking of is Selma Cruz.
Yeah. And they've already done that before, you know? So that was just one of those things that felt like a real miss. And I think I don't know what the it sounds like, Pat, based on your description, it sounds like they restore Hyrule. It's not like I'm going to beat the fucking game anyway. But yeah, maybe the ballsier choice is to go, yeah, you did this, but shit's still fucked up.
But you settled it.
Yeah, but you settled it. It's over. So I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah. I'm sorry to everyone, but yeah, that's they basically just say they're going to restore Hyrule anew. And that's the ending.
Mm.
So. Like, how is that interesting?
Exactly.
Well, and that's not even remotely surprising that's the basically, and they all lived happily ever after the yeah. end.
There's just a lot more rebuilding to do this time.
Yeah. Interesting ruins.
Yeah.
Yeah. Perth looks great.
How about you, Teresa?
Well, I mean, I literally grew up with this stuff. So we didn't have an NES or a Super Nintendo until about the time I hit college. And I had played my friend's stuff here and there. You know, I'd go to like sleepovers and I would choose who I slept over at by what gaming systems they had. So if they had any gaming systems, I was good to go there. I was a little bit of an opportunist and I started that way back in the ColecoVision days. Yeah, all my friends had gaming systems because I didn't. It's kind of mean, but they were also my friends too.
Yeah, I can't knock the hustle.
So Link to the Past was my first one that I played at great length, and it was definitely the first one that I beat. And no, it's not the only one that I've beat multiple times, but it's the one that I beat the most multiple times. So we didn't have a Super Nintendo my first year of college, me being me and Scott, because we were dating back then, me or him. So our little brothers did, and we could only play when we went back home on the weekends. So his roommate did. And whenever Glenn wasn't there, guess who was using Glenn's Super Nintendo a lot? And then he'd walk in and he's like, oh, you're here. And I'm like, yep, I am. You mind if I play? Because I'm already playing your machine. It was probably a really shitty thing to do. And I feel bad for Glenn because he probably didn't like me touching his shit. I get it now. But so that's what we did. And then eventually, we moved out of the dorm. Scott brought his NES and I played a lot of the original Zelda. And then I also played what was the one on Game Boy? Link's Awakening. I played a lot of that because it was portable, you know, take it with you. We did get a Super Nintendo, or maybe my brother moved in with us and we played a lot. I think that's what happened. He moved in with us. He brought his Super Nintendo, and so I got to play Link to the Past a lot again. And we just kind of kept doing that for what seemed like a very long time. And it really wasn't. But from 86 to what, 96 or something, whenever Ocarina of Time came out, it seemed like a really long time to me because those were the 10 years that I was growing up. And time kind of stands still when you're a kid, whereas now, as adults, the Zelda games that came out 10 years ago, I'm like, didn't they just come out yesterday? But they didn't. So Ocarina of Time came out and I really did like that. I was grabbed by the environment immediately. I was grabbed by the concept of an ocarina. The Deku tree, all of that, like it was like living in a Studio Ghibli cartoon.
Now I will say I did bag on Ocarina of Time, but I will say that the scope of it felt very grand. It had the same feeling that Link to the Past did. We're like, but it was in 3D. Like to that point, looking up at the Deku tree was like, whoa.
Yeah,
it fuck, was. Okay.
It was. I did. I really liked it. We played it a lot. Majora's Mask came along next, and I played quite a bit of that, but I never finished it.
It was a hell of a misstep launching that the same day as the PS2, though.
Yeah, it just... And still, I haven't gone back and finished it. And I'm pretty freaking sure we still have it. And I don't have any idea which card has my save data or if it would even still work. Or if I would even remember where I was. And I remember restarting it at least once because I couldn't remember where I was and what I was supposed to be doing. But Wind Waker, I completely missed it. I remember it being released. I remember people playing it. I guess it was probably when I was finishing college, because I stopped for a while and I was working full time. But whatever happened, I didn't play it at all. Like, nothing. I still haven't played it. And, you know, I like to say that I'd like to go back and play all the Zelda games, the main Zelda games, in order. Dudes, I'm never going to be able to do that. There's just not enough time. There really isn't. But I was still playing the handheld ones that came out, like Oracle of Ages, Oracle of Seasons, Minish Cap. I played those because I would take them to work and play them at work or play them.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe I didn't mention Minish Cap. Minish Cap was so fucking good.
Minish
Cap was what I wanted. And after we had Twilight Princess and Skyward Sword, and playing that was just, and of course I realized that those came out afterwards, but that felt like the return to form.
It did.
And it was so beautiful. And it was also, you know, I think a lot of Zelda games hinge on gimmicks, but it was a gimmick that they haven't really done before and they haven't done since.
Yeah.
And it was just, it felt to me like it had that same kind of DNA that Link's Awakening did, which is like, we're going to do some weird shit. Yeah. You know, because Link's Awakening does some weird shit, and so does Minish Cap, but it works because it nails the aesthetic, it nails the feeling, and due to like the shrinking mechanic, it gives the game a level of grandiosity that I don't think it probably would have otherwise. And then you combine that with the fact that it was on the GBA, it had really, really pretty, colorful, fluid graphics. It was just a great game.
Yeah, it was. I really enjoyed that. And I think until Minish Cap came out, every fucking game that came out for Zelda since Link to the Past disappointed Scott. Every one of them. He could
not.
Me
and Scott need to have a beer.
He can't play 3D games very well. I'm whispering like he's going to come in here and hear me like this isn't a podcast.
What'd you say, woman? No, I don't have that problem. But no, that's interesting that's let him down. No kidding.
Yeah, no, he does very, very poorly in a 3D environment. He has no internal sense of direction whatsoever.
Is that why he doesn't play PSO2 with us?
Yeah, that's one of the reasons he doesn't play that. He's just, it's not his thing. One of the reasons that we play Kingdom Two Crowns all the time is that it's 2D side scroller. It hits the right notes for him. But yeah, he honestly, and it's frustrating to watch whenever he tries to play a 3D game, and he was playing Jedi Fallen Order, and it's so frustrating to watch because he just gets turned around.
Well, that game's not very good anyway. It won't turn around anyone. So,
but anything, you know, he just, it's, and I think that there's probably other people like him. There's probably other gamers like him that have no sense of spatial direction whatsoever. And these are bad games for them until Minish Cap. So that one got a lot of play between the two of us. But Twilight Princess, I did not play because I was pregnant and I was playing Final Fantasy 11. And that's,
well, that's the thing. Was. If you did the waggle in that game, you'd have miscarried. So,
well, I just about,
either that or the baby would be born and immediately would have shaken baby syndrome. That would be a first in the delivery room. Like, what the fuck happened? You know, I was in Hyrule and shit went down.
Yeah, no, I did actually go back and pick it up later, and I was playing Twilight Princess HD last year, and I got pretty far in, and then I just stopped. So, yeah, I don't know what to say about that. But handheld again, Phantom Hourglass, I played a good bit of that. And then, you guys already talked about Link Between Worlds. Fucking stellar game.
Especially at 1080p.
Right. Okay. And I do. I'm gonna
play it on the 3DS, but hearing you guys, you know, praise it, I'm gonna,
it is awesome. It is absolutely one of my top three titles. And it's really? Probably number two. Of course, Link to the Past is my number one. But yeah. Oh my god, yeah. Link Between Worlds is, I mean, I was completely blown away with them turning him into like a little Paper Mario type of dude. And that gameplay mechanic just, I laughed with delight when it happened.
Okay.
And
well, that's high praise.
Yeah, I don't watch a lot of previews, and I don't listen to a lot of, I don't want any spoilers, goddammit.
Yeah, I don't really know shit about the game except that there's that, you know, he goes 2D essentially.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't I'm gonna be going into it blind. I've been able to avoid the only other thing I do know is like, can't you like buy your weapons if you want to?
Yeah.
I think is it. Which that is interesting in concept because you, as opposed to, you know, Breath of the Wild, you can play it however you want. So if you, I guess if you want to buy those weapons, you can, but if you just want to get, you know, gain things, I would imagine, through normal means, then you don't, you can still just play it as you would want to play it.
Yeah.
But giving the choices is better than not. God, I don't like that fucking game.
Well, after that one, I did play Skyward Sword a little bit, like maybe 10 hours, maybe, but again, I guess I was playing other stuff, but
if they re-released that game with conventional controls, I would be all of it.
Yeah, that could have been it. But Breath of the Wild, I really, really liked it. It's probably my number three top Zelda game. It is. It's Link to the Past, Link Between Worlds, and then Breath of the Wild. Because I like, and my favorite part of Breath of the Wild is finding the photo memories of Link's past and trying to put together what he's forgotten. And why that's my favorite part, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe because I like to go out and play hide and seek. I'm actually currently playing a Zelda game, although it's a spinoff. I'm playing Hyrule Warrior Age of Calamity. I picked that one up week of Christmas, I believe. And, you know, it's just a hack and slash. But it does have stasis. It has a lot of stuff from Breath of the Wild. And the battle mechanics, they're used there, but Lee, it is different, of course, because it's a hack and slash.
Does anything break?
Just mobs. No.
It's almost like that's a bad mechanic. I don't know. Maybe that Lee Lamb guy's onto something. I don't know.
No weapon breaks. But it is actually a little harder than I thought it was going to be. I thought it'd be a delightful little hack and slash, and you play it on normal, and normal's going to be like easy. No, normal is actually a pretty decently hard normal, which, you know, props to the game for doing that. So we'll see if I finish it, but it's not really one that you finish. I mean, you just hack and slash until you're done with it and move on to the next game. So that's pretty much Zelda for me. I mean, I've played, God, what, probably half the games? I think. Half of the main games, at least. So, yeah. It's a pretty important series to me.
Yeah.
So, Pat, what about you? Where did you start?
I started back in 1990 with Zelda 2, actually. Which I guess makes me a bit of a rarity. Zelda, not many people really start with the most offbeat installment in the series, probably to date. I wanted to get a hold of the original game long before I actually did. It was several months before I was even able to rent it, let alone purchase a copy. But Zelda 2 is kind of interesting in that it was more of a side-scrolling platformer than a proper top-down Zelda title as you think of them. And when I finally got to play the original, I was surprised at how different it was. And I'll admit to some degree of relief when I found out that that was the formula they were going to follow, you know, moving forward when A Link to the Past came out. And I'm right there with you on that, Lee. I think A Link to the Past is one of the greatest games of all time, no question. Ocarina of Time is where they lost me, because it seems like there are two kinds of gamers. You've got people who are focused on gameplay mechanics and they think of a series identity in those terms, how a game feels to play in the kinetic sense, how it feels moving your character around. Then you have gamers who are more conceptually focused. It doesn't matter what it feels like to move your character around, but a series ends up being more about what you're doing rather than how you're doing it. Now, I fall into the former category. And so having them overhaul Link's gameplay mechanics to the extent that they did, and really had him running around the screen like he thought he was Mario, was really off-putting to me. And if they could have found another way to go about that, they probably would have had me really getting behind that installment myself, because I can't fault the level design or the actual content of the game. I just didn't like how it played. I didn't like how it felt. And that kind of, between that and a similar snarl with F-Zero, I kind of dropped my support for Nintendo platforms that year, 1998, and didn't really circle back to them until they launched the GameCube. That being said, I don't detest 3D Zelda categorically. I thought Wind Waker had its moments of brilliance. My playthrough of Twilight Princess was on the GameCube, so I didn't have to deal with Waggle at all. And I don't really... It wasn't disinterest that ended my playthrough of it. It was just shit going on in life. And I just never got back to it. And so really wish it would show up on the Switch, but I mean, I own the license, so I guess I can just run it on Dolphin. So maybe I'll get back to that game one of these times. So, but Breath of the Wild to me is, like I said earlier, I feel like it's a Zelda game that they can get away with once because the concept is just that damn interesting. But the entire structure of the game, the shrines, the great beasts or whatever they called them, divine beasts, and only having four of those, that has to go. You have to bring back gear gates. You have to bring back enough different kinds of gear to make them matter. And I'm hoping that with what I'm guessing they're still calling Breath of the Wild 2, I'm really hoping that they keep the same idea of just leaving you out in Hyrule or wherever the game takes place. No hand-holding, no overblown tutorial. Just go out there and explore, but do it with all of the mechanics and the benefits that come with a standard Zelda game, rather than a post-Hyrule sort of wasteland Hyrule. Like, to me, all of the things that were annoying about Breath of the Wild still made sense to me in the world they were trying to convey. It made sense that the Master Sword would burn out because the legend was over. It was really just a sword that has lingering remnants of power in it, but everything in that entire world is in a state of entropy. It's a kingdom decomposing, and it's pretty far along the process by the time you actually start the game. So I didn't really begrudge them that, even though I didn't like it from a design standpoint. I understood that it fit the world that they were trying to convey. But as far as I'm concerned, it will always be like The Legend of Zelda, Link to the Past, Link Between Worlds, and, you know, the handheld ones, notwithstanding the DS installments. I didn't even like how Link handled in 3D at first. I'm not going to use a fucking stylus. But give me those top-down, you know, original design Zelda concepts, and I will play them all the time. That is the Legend of Zelda to me. And it's kind of strange that it got so strictly defined in my own view when I started out with the most experimental game in the series and one that I would honestly like to see a follow-up to. But yeah, that's kind of how I got into the series and how my experience with the series evolved over time. So yeah. So let's start with you, Kayla, on where do you think the series goes from here?
Well, I think that something really important for the 35th anniversary of Zelda is to get the main Zelda games onto the Switch.
Yes.
Wind Waker, Twilight Princess, and especially Skyward Sword, which I never played, and I kind of don't want to on the Wii because of the motion control.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Same reason why I kind
of... If they made a controller-based version of Skyward Sword, they would sell all of the copies.
It's basically like there's very few games that I think did motion control well, and none of them were Zelda games.
No.
The only good game I can think of was the Mario Galaxy games, but that's besides the point. So I think getting Wind Waker, Twilight Princess, and Skyward Sword on the Switch is really important for the 35th anniversary.
Zelda 3D All-Stars?
Yeah, pretty much. And in terms of Breath of the Wild, I mean, I really loved all the mechanics from Breath of the Wild, including the weapons breaking. But if they went on a more streamlined approach to, if they went on a more streamlined approach and got rid of that mechanic from Breath of the Wild 2, I wouldn't object to that, but I do think it worked really well in Breath of the Wild. Yeah. I would like to see another 2D Zelda.
Yes.
That's something that's really important. I would love to see, because Link's Awakening HD was amazing on the Switch.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
That really made me appreciate that game more. And I would like to see a follow-up to that or a follow-up to a link between worlds on the Switch.
Make the best Zelda a trilogy. That would be fantastic.
Oh, my.
Because I don't think the series has anything that you could call a proper trilogy, and it's been 35 years.
Interesting concept.
I just became aware of that. So, Lee, how about you?
I think that, so for the 35th anniversary, I absolutely agree with what Kayla said. I think they need to get some of these other games that were on like the Wii U and put them on the Switch. In fact, I would argue that, and they'll never do this because it's Nintendo, but put every fucking Zelda game on the Switch.
Yeah.
And they got a good chunk of them there. You know, but, you know, port Phantom Hourglass. And granted, you know, that kind of stuff. People don't want to deal with stylus, but you do have a touchscreen. You know, there are ways to do this. Or just bring the games back, the ones that you can, and get rid of the gimmicky controls. You don't have to do waggle. You don't have to do touchscreen. You know, get rid of that. Like, Mario Galaxy was a great example. So, like, I use my Switch pretty much only in handheld mode. But, you know, so in handheld mode, you can just swipe the star dust or the star bits that come out, right? So you don't have to waggle, swing a Wii remote around or anything like that. You know, I think that there's precedence for them to take a game that had motion controls and just configure it so that you don't have to do that.
So what do you do if you're playing it on TV?
You just, you can hit a button and you get a finger.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. A pointer. Yeah.
Cool.
And so then you just swing that pointer around. So, so again, I think there are ways to do it. And one of the things that bothers me about Nintendo is they obviously are aware of what they have, but they never really take advantage of it. So I totally agree with Kayla. I think put and even further, put every Zelda game on the damn Switch that you can. And really honor, you know, do something extravagant besides porting those games
and then taking him off the eShop in a few months, like they're doing with Mario. You know, Zelda's a big deal, and I think it's apparent by the conversations that we're having that Zelda means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. Like, I'm someone who, at my core, absolutely loves that series, but I hate probably half the entries in it. And there are other people that are the exact opposite of me, might not have liked the entries that I like, but love stuff like Breath of the Wild. So I think, you know, giving everybody access to these games is the most important thing, and making a big deal out of that, and going beyond just, you know, porting them, you know, clean them up, you know, don't do what you did with Mario 64, which was you're running it at 720p. There's no reason that game couldn't have been 1080. You know, you can do that with, you know, Ocarina of Time. You can, you know, you can move that stuff over and still be faithful to the originals and give people the scope of Zelda. So that's what I hope that they do. I really hope that, you know, they release, you know, some kind of package that really celebrates Zelda, that just doesn't dump, you know, doesn't really amount to three ROMs dumped onto a system with a little bit of up-resing, you know.
Yeah.
Give us some supplemental materials. Like, unlike Mario, there's a lot of interesting stuff around Zelda, just when it comes to like stories, even just simple stuff like concept art. Like, here is how this character started. This is the way he evolved. This was the idea of stuff that we did. Throw in the fucking the video, the Space World demo that had everybody get a hard on for realistic looking Link, which then caused the problem when they introduced Wind Waker Link.
Yep.
You know, show that. Like, Zelda's got a very, very interesting history. And, you know, so provide some of those supplemental materials, you know, talk to like, one of the most interesting things that I've seen for Super Mario Brothers. I'd never seen Nintendo really kind of officially put out anywhere, but it was on Kotaku, and forgive me, I'm probably getting the details a little bit messed up because it's been a few years, but they had pictures of graph paper where people had, like, the original Mario, Super Mario designers had drawn out their levels. That stuff is really interesting to see. Here's how they conceptualize the level. Show
amazing.
Us that stuff. Because Zelda, like, when you look at it on paper, you know, it's like that, you know, Miyamoto said that Zelda was inspired by his love of exploring caves and things like that when he was a kid. So show us how, you know, you take that idea and then you create something that has lasted as long as Zelda has. Show us where that started. Show us how these games got put together. You know, that's what I would love to see. And because I would love to see it, Nintendo will never do it. But, you know, I feel like, unlike Mario Brothers, which is like, here are just some concepts we want to do, and Mario's the one doing them, Zelda has a lot more wrapped into it just because of the way the games are made. You know, and even if we're going, you know, for wish list, I'd love to at least see, you know, the logic behind why weapon breaking, you know, was done. I know that it was done to address a difficulty setting, essentially, but what, you know, I work in software. So, you know, when you have an idea, especially something that's kind of like wild, you have to explain to somebody why you're doing that. And there's always a lot of conversation around this and that. I'd love to see some, just the behind the scenes of how they put these games together. I think that would be the best thing that they could do for fans of this series that have stuck with it for so long, because it is a series that means a lot to a lot of different people. Like, what it means to me is very different to my son. My son loves Zelda. I mean, he dressed up as like Link and Dark Link, like, four Halloweens in a row. Like, he loves this stuff, you know, and to him, especially, like, you know, in COVID times, you know, being able to at least like fire up Breath of the Wild and wander around is, you know, what he can do when he's stuck inside, you know? So again, this game means a lot to a lot, just this series rather, means a lot to a lot of people. And I hope that they can find a way to honor that. And I think the best way to do that is to show people how this stuff is made.
Yeah.
And again, you know, give all these people the opportunity to play all of these games, because, you know, it's funny, you know, just because I got off on that tangent about Breath of the Wild, and I skipped over, I've played almost every one of the portable entries, and some of them are hit and miss. But there's also some really interesting stuff. Like, hell, if we're talking about like the Oracle games, Capcom helped make
yep.
those,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, one of those things where, you know it, but you don't really talk about it. It's like, well, how did you guys decide to do this? What was the, you know, What was the genesis of this? Why did you decide to do this in this way? Because, like, you know, the Oracle games are connected, which, you know, at the time, it's a really interesting concept. Why do that? Like, and some of that lies in the DNA of the Nintendo teams that were doing this. Like, the team that did Link's Awakening, you know, they did some weird shit with Link's Awakening, because at that time, I don't think it had truly been crystallized, because Zelda 1 and Zelda 2 were completely different. And then, you know, you had Link to the Past sort of take Zelda 1 and make it perfect. And then it kind of feels like, in a lot of ways, at least to me, because of certain sections of Link's Awakening, that is supposed to kind of be a spiritual sequel to the way that Zelda 2 was, where you do have a little side scrolling here and there, but it also mixes in kind of some of the stuff that you had with Link to the Past. And then again, just like with like weird stuff, because it's not, the point of it isn't Ganon at all, you know? So it takes you away from the overall sort of dark concept that Zelda revolves around. So again, I just think there's a lot to mine there, and I hope that they do that. And you know, for the future, I hope that, fuck it. Give me a button in Breath of the Wild 2. If I want to play with weapons breaking, I can. If I don't, then I can just, you know, stick with the weapons that I got. That would make me happy. And that would still give people that have no issues with the weapon breakers, like Teresa, who is wrong, the option to still play the way that they want to. You know, that's what I want to see. Because that's the other thing I think that works so well for Zelda in a lot of ways is, to me, the games have always felt very flexible in the way that you approach them. And so I think even just having an option like that, you know, could bring some of that flexibility back. So
now look what happened really to Fire Emblem when they did that with character death.
Yeah. And then you had some of those hardcore people that were like, you know, gnashing their teeth that, you know, this isn't real fucking Fire Emblem. Yeah. Well, if they kept it the way you wanted, there'd never be another one.
Yeah. Awakening basically rebirthed the series.
Yeah, and it was supposed to be the swan song. Because they're like, well, fuck it, we're going out. You know?
Yep.
So, you know, that's kind of what I hope for. And I'm curious to see what they do in general. Because I do think the other thing is, I feel like they have taken the assets of Zelda and have expounded on those things and expanded on those things in a way that they have not been able to do with Mario, because Mario is more of a concept than anything. Like, there's no real fucking story. Like, because if you're really trying to get down with the story of Mario Brothers, like, well, it's Koopa's the bad guy, but then they go golfing with him. So how's that work? Link and Ganon aren't going to go golfing with each other.
No.
You know? So, and you know, you have like, they introduced those like three encyclopedias about Zelda. They got manga series, you know, there's all of this stuff. And so, again, I think that's also why this series means a lot to a lot of people, because it is, in a lot of ways, you can insert yourself into Link's shoes in a way that you can't with Mario, especially when you get to like the 19th game and you're like, this bitch is still getting kidnapped.
Yeah.
You know,
and that's the same thing as the Spider-Man concept Stan Lee talked about, that Spider-Man wears a mask because anyone could be underneath it.
Yep. And when he takes that mask off, he's still going to have the same problems regardless of the fact that he's got superpowers.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's what I hope for.
Yeah. You mentioned providing a lot of insight as to how a lot of the stuff came together. You know what I think would be the perfect way to package that?
Tell me.
Zelda Maker.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I'm wondering, that has to be around the corner, right? Maybe not around the corner, but it has to be something they're considering.
Yeah, it has to be in their mindset somewhere. Yeah.
See, but I wonder what the implementation of that looks like, because Mario Maker works because it's just make a level. So Zelda's not level based.
No,
it's a world. Now you do have dungeons. Mm-hmm. So maybe do you have a persistent overworld, but the dungeons change? Which that technically is how Zelda works in the first place.
I think that's how that's what you'd have to do to have gear gates.
Yeah. Yeah, like, yeah, you can't approach this dungeon unless you have the hook shot.
Yep.
For example, or something like that. And maybe it sounds like you could take the framework of, as I understand it, you know, a link between worlds of, well, you can buy the hook shot.
Yeah. That would actually go really good in a Zelda Maker.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean that would you. I've always thought since they introduced Mario Maker and then they put Link in there and all these other characters. There this has to be something that they're thinking about.
Yeah.
So I mean that would be really interesting.
I think Maker is the big series that Nintendo's sleeping on. You have Mario Maker. You could have Zelda Maker. You could have Metroid Maker. You know, imagine how that would go.
Yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting concept because I do also then wonder, like, I really like the Mario Maker concept, but I don't enjoy playing the game simply because what I found is after you got out of that first 2 or 3 months of it, it's like, we're going to try and now create the Dark Souls of Mario levels.
Yeah, fuck
you
know? That noise. Like, Kaizo Mario stuff. I can't get into that. I like to see personal takes on conventional Mario.
Yeah.
Like that's my big thing. If I ever have a lot of time to work with on a Mario Maker project, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to remake Super Mario Brothers 3.
That'd be dope.
Like I have ideas about things that I would change, things that I would leave the same, but I would remake that game in its entirety with, you know, maybe some items are more available. Maybe some are more scarce. Like, I think the frog suit was something that they overexposed a little for something that didn't really feel that great to use. And the hammer suit made you feel like God, but it was only available in like 2 places in the entire fucking game. Yeah, that's the kind of stuff I'd like to fine tune.
Yeah, that'd be pretty dope. Yeah.
Kind of balance out the distribution of items and, you know, reconceptualize levels around that. But anyway, that's a little bit sidetracked. But Teresa, how about you?
Well, definitely I'm okay with whatever it is that they're doing for Breath of the Wild 2. I'm fine with that. But like the rest of you, I would like to see another console-based. Does that even matter now that we have the Switch? Because it could be handheld so easily. Well,
no, there is no console versus handheld anymore.
Yeah.
You've got the Switch, which is a system that can be either. And then you've got Sony and Nintendo, or Sony and Microsoft, that couldn't give a shit less about handhelds.
Yeah.
So they're just video games now. And I love that that's the point we're at.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to play a new 2D Zelda on the big screen. That's what I want to do.
God, yes.
I don't necessarily care what form that is, but if I had some choice in the matter, I would ask for some sort of co-op play. Mm-hmm. Not crazy multiplayer online, and not anything like Four Swords, because that's a whole different spin-offy thing. But no, 2 heroes on screen, or a hero and a sidekick, a Mario and a Luigi.
Interesting.
Yep. I don't know how they'd do it, but that would be pretty cool.
Well, I think what they would do is just go with the Phantasy Star Online model and have the online option and the offline mode.
Yeah.
But there's no reason it couldn't be done. Although I do think Four Swords would be the prototype, the blueprint for whatever they do from a design standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
But I do feel like it would have to be a blend of online and couch co-op, because I mean, even without a pandemic, so much of gaming has moved online that you just can't get away with making a co-op game of that nature and not making it playable in as many forms as possible.
Yeah.
Anybody think we're going to get a new Game & Watch?
That would be interesting, because the Game & Watch for Mario, actually I'm sitting right here on my desk, is quite cool. You know, chargeable battery, all of that. Like, fucking give me Zelda 1 and 2 on this bitch.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. That's what I want to see. I think it would lend itself really well to that treatment. And if they get the design of it right, they would sell all of the units, like, no question.
Just make it fucking gold.
Yep. Get a nice imprint on the back of it. Yeah, they'll sell like crazy.
Yeah, put a Triforce imprint on the back of that bitch.
Yep.
Yeah, it'd be dope. It'd be dope. Yeah, I don't know. I'm very curious, you know, what they'll do in general. Probably nothing that we want. or they will do it, you know, they'll do something and it'll be like, now you can't find it. And that's like, Jesus.
Well, that's what the demand would cause.
Yeah.
But for my part, for what I would like to see them do next, and they're not going to because they botched the ending to Breath of the Wild. What I would want to see them do is just announce a game that has no visible association with the Zelda series whatsoever. Give it a completely different title, but have some thematic callbacks, or mechanical callbacks, I should say, to the Zelda series. Make it so it's set maybe in a very futuristic setting, but base it on an archaeologist, a financier, and somebody who kind of works with the archaeologist or an intermediary between the other two, and make it so that they're just exploring ruins in this, you know, far futuristic civilization. But the huge reveal is that there are still elements of Hyrule at work, elements of the legend at work in the world today. And when you get through that first wave of three levels, that's when you find out about it. And then the title screen actually changes to The Legend of Zelda, and whatever the marketed title of the game was is the subtitle.
Yeah.
And that that Link is still going through the 100-year cycle of rebirth, and that pretty much everyone is, really, and that the three characters who are now actually working together to unravel what ended up being Hyrule turns out to be Link, Zelda, and Ganon reincarnated. Mm. That is what I would like to see. That is... I'm glad I've got some approval there, but that has been my long idealized Legend of Zelda title going way back to when Hyrule Historia was first released. Because if you look at the timelines, some of the most critical games in the series are in what they call the Age of Decline timeline. And you have the original, and then you have A Link to the Past, and there is an argument that you could make that Breath of the Wild goes in that spot underneath or after Zelda 2. But if not, then Hyrule just slowly declines and ceases to be over time. And you even see signs of that in Zelda 2, if you go back and look at it. But I just feel like there's so much potential in a game beyond there on the timeline. That's what I want to see happen. But
it'd be pretty interesting.
Yeah, that's what I would like to see. But yeah, that is my vision for the future of the series. I don't think we're going to see it in any form, but until they release an updated Hyrule Historia that accounts for Breath of the Wild and probably Breath of the Wild 2, I don't think we're going to know one way or the other how possible such a thing is. And I don't know if Nintendo would have the guts to release an in-series Zelda title without actually putting it on the box. Because I will admit, that is an almost Kojima-like bait and switch.
Yeah.
But goddamn, would it be awesome.
Yeah.
To just blow the entire gaming community's mind when they realize that game that they were probably complaining to Nintendo was taking up a, you know, why don't you just make another Zelda? Well, here it fucking is, under your nose the whole time. Maybe it's a little bit trollish too, but I like it.
Nice.
It'd be ballsy.
Yeah. I think we've got a show there. So you can subscribe to us on anchor.fm, Spotify, Pocket Cast, and many other places. You can also support us on Patreon and get unedited episodes right away, or offer up ideas for entire segments that you'd like to see us cover on the show. Some guidelines do apply. And if you have any questions, you can always email us at thegamerswithoutborders@gmail.com. Once again, that is thegamerswithoutborders@gmail.com. So for Teresa Sammons, Lee Lamb, and Kayla Owen, I have been Patrick Mifflin. We will see you next time.